Welcome. We now join Fred Kuhn and his guest.
Welcome, everybody. We have a great show today. It is a continuing discussion with Rabbi Chaim Herring, who is a PhD in organization and management and also an ordained rabbi. He has worked a lot in the nonprofit area and as well as the for-profit area, and sees a confluence of those two as regards the workforce. He is a prolific author, and today we're going to discuss some aspects of his book, and he's going to share some real-life examples with us. His book is Connecting Generations, Bridging the Boomer, Gen X, and Millennial Divide. Chaim, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Fred, and good to be back.
Absolutely. Glad to have you back. So your book is very powerful, and it's coming out when? It's coming out this month, isn't it?
In April. Early May.
Early May. It'll be out in early May, so everybody look for it. So in getting the book together, pulling that together, as an author myself, I know what the effort was. So what I would like to do is, instead of the academic side, what's a favorite story from your book that undergirds your exploration of intergenerational as a concept?
Yeah, this was a challenging question because the stories were quite powerful. But I want to tell you one about, and this is a pseudonym, we'll call her Priscilla Quentin. That's her name in the book. At the time that I interviewed her, she was late 60s, early 70s, very distinguished, nonconformist, you know, broke every gender barrier, worked in the palliative care area, and set up lots of programs in nursing, palliative care, all over the country. And when it came time for Priscilla as a daughter, and the family members decided it certainly made sense for her to take the lead on this care issue for a parent, a mom who was in her 90s, she was actually befuddled and thwarted by the intergenerational issues that she didn't expect to have to navigate. So, as someone who knew the system well, she realized that she would need some outside help. I won't mention the name of the agency, but Priscilla got a call at work one day. Again, she was in her own private healthcare consulting business. And every day she called her mom and said, "Mom, how are you doing today?" And her mother said, "Well, I'm doing fine. And my companion and her friend are very lovely." And Priscilla stopped for a moment and said, "Mom, you realize that we only hired one companion?" And she said, "I know, but I don't hear that well. But my companion and her friend seem to be having a lovely conversation. My companion's friend keeps asking, 'Sorry, how do you write a check? Sorry, how do you get to the doctor?'" Well, you know where this story is going. There was a click. Priscilla immediately
she got in the car and drove over there
and said goodbye to her mom's companion very politely, held up her phone and said, "Mom, this is not Surrey, but Siri. And she is in the phone. It's not a person." Not only that, but this woman, Priscilla, had even gone to the trouble. They had worked out that a millennial nephew would stay with her mother in the basement. He was starting a new job, again, another measure of safety. In the end, and he really rose to the occasion, by the way, but little things like, you know, you got to tap grandma on the shoulder so she doesn't think that somebody's broken into her home. So what does this story encapsulate? An accomplished individual who had to finally stop working because even with all of her knowledge of systems that were created to support families, she couldn't work even with a nephew living in the basement and even with additional companion care. And that really captures the intergenerational nature of these unprecedented situations that we're in that have an impact on life and families and work.
Very poignant story and very meaningful. Would you elaborate on someone you mentioned in your acknowledgments who spark ideas for our listeners? Because I want our listeners to be able to come away with something they can do, implement, grab onto, think about in each of these podcasts. So why don't you talk about someone who you believe can help spark the listeners and who've influenced or helped them and how that all worked?
Well, happened to be my rabbi, Cass Abelson. I think he was more of a youngster back then at 92 when I interviewed him. I believe it'll be coming up on 94. And whenever I've had a question or issue, he's just been someone who's been future-oriented. And his advice around this topic, whether it was family or work, was don't be stubborn. This is coming from a 92-year-old. Keep an open mind and don't adhere to a position that may prove inadvisable over time. Anticipate is what he said. Listen to signals in the background. Ask questions if you're not sure. And certainly when it comes to family situations, which have an impact on work, don't forget to advance conversations. Don't wait until the crisis happens. Be in a conversation mode, and that applies at work. Instead of sending the email, get up from your desk, walk over to someone, avoid a flying chain of emails. This is my elaboration, and have a two-minute conversation. It's much more fulfilling.
That's interesting because he would have been beyond boomer, right? And yet, in the testing and stuff for the younger generations, the Zs, the Ys, they would much prefer to have the text because it's less intrusive into their space than somebody coming into their cubicle or their office and, quote, end quote, confronting them. They see it as confrontational as opposed to dialogational, if there's such a word as that. And it goes back to the communication expectations, I think, that I'm seeing as we explore this topic in not only with you, but with others as well. And I find that a very fascinating story. What are your thoughts about that in terms of the styles of how people like to be communicated with?
Well, we do have different communication styles, but that's not really new.
No,
what's new
it's not.
Is that technology just makes it a little bit more confusing.
Confusing to whom, though? Chaim, confusing to whom? Confusing to the boomer, maybe? Confusing to the younger person whose life has always started with texts? I don't know.
Yes and yes and yes. And that's where I think, you know, employers have some work to do around letting boomers get a little bit more comfortable with getting a text and not responding within 24 hours, and also where boomers can help those who are younger understand some things are really fine for a text or an internal sort of quick message, and other things, instead of wasting time, because that's what you wind up doing over this misunderstanding of emojis, right? Take the 2 minutes and look at somebody in the eye and make eye contact and understand. So I think it's got to be a give and take among the generations, across the generations, and we all have to expand our repertoire of communication styles.
I have one more last question. I've written several books, and as have you. What do you think your most significant challenge was in putting the book together, and how'd you overcome it, and what'd you learn from all that?
I hope I learned to be a better listener, because in research mode, as you know, you have to listen carefully. It's not a time for opinions or argument. It's actually, I remember, I won't mention the individual's name, but I was interviewing a millennial talking about the rigidity of boomer parents. They're not fun to be with. They're entitled, the things we spoke about before. I waited until the interview finished. And I said, I'm going to take what you said as a compliment because I'm actually a little bit older than your parents. And then I realized, again, we can't fault people who are millennials and younger for these attitudes. They're critiquing what they saw. And we have to be open to critique. It doesn't mean that they're always right, but a conversation doesn't happen without listening, without judgment first.
And we also have another layer of complexity. It's probably a good idea for another discussion, but it's we had the generation with the helicopter moms, and now we have the snowplow moms, and they have come from that kind of setup environment, so their thinking is structured like that. And we as boomers came from a different kind of structure. So it's really about communicating and listening. You're absolutely right.
And I might add, I'm seeing moms and dads as well. I think it's
oh,
a
yes,
generational
absolutely.
Switch.
The parenting thing, yes.
Yes.
I just use the typical phrase that's used today. It's either helicopter moms or snowplowing moms. But yes, it's the type of parenting style.
Very different today.
Folks, we have spent a wonderful time here with our guest, Rabbi Chaim Herring, who is CEO of ChaimHerring.com. Chaim, thanks very much for sharing your ideas and your thoughts. Folks, get out and buy his book. It's a wonderful book, and you'll learn a lot from it, and you can find out the contact information on the guest biography section of Workplace Strategies. Chaim, thanks so much.
Fred, and thank you. Much appreciated.
Thanks for joining us. If you wish to speak with Fred, or you want a transcript of this interview, send an email to podcast@stuartcoopercoon.com. See you soon.